This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It is very clear that there has been underfunding of the humanitarian response, and people have not been able to care for themselves. They are in displacement and they cannot farm, and this has had a very severe effect on the possibility of getting food, and malnutrition and hunger is increasing rapidly.
That's Ulrika Blom, country director in the DRC for the Norwegian Refugee Council. The number of people going hungry in the DRC has doubled over the last year. We'll have full details on this story coming up.
Also, the reformist prime minister of Ethiopia announces yesterday a new cabinet is half female. The World Health Organization is meeting to decide whether to declare the Ebola outbreak in the DRC a public health emergency of international concern. And a new investigative documentary has implicated Kenyan banks in money laundering for corrupt South Sudanese leaders.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the new Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Abiy Ahmed, has marked his nearly 7 months in office with significant reforms for this once authoritarian country, notably releasing thousands of political prisoners, making peace with rival Eritrea, and promising to open up the economy. In his latest move, the Prime Minister announced yesterday a new cabinet that is half female, putting women in very high posts for the first time in Ethiopia's history. To discuss the matter, we have in studio VOA's Salem Salamon. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
What is the significance of all this?
Gender parity has been a serious issue across the continent, and Ethiopia just became the second country to have 50% women in parliament with Dr. Abiy Ahmed's move to have half of his cabinet members. It's been it's been lauded as one of the many reforms that Dr. Abiy has instituted. This is Ethiopia becomes the second country in Africa next to Rwanda. Rwanda has over 60 members in its parliament. So this is a very encouraging move that we're seeing in Ethiopia. The women come, half of the cabinet ministers are PhD holders. These are women who have had experience in these positions. For example, one of the women who is the Minister of Defense, it used to be the construction minister in the past. She's an engineer by training. And she comes from the Afar ethnic group, and so it's not just about women gender parity that this move signifies, but also, you know, there's a lot of, representation, lack of representation with Ethiopia having 80 ethnic groups. And so this move also marks the reaching out of other ethnic groups within the country.
We'll come to the ethnic groups later. The lack of gender equality, as you succinctly mentioned, has been a persistent problem in Africa as well as in Ethiopian politics. So talk to us specifically about the newly appointed ministers, especially Defense Minister Aisha Mohammed and Mufriyat Kamil, head of the newly formed Ministry of Peace.
Yes, especially the Minister of Peace has been a very, conversation starter within Ethiopia, because Minister of Peace is supposed to oversee information and intelligence. It's, I think, some are saying inspired by Homeland Security kind of apparatus, and some online are actually, likening it to Orwellian kind of approach.
The Federal Police, the Intelligence Service, Information Security Agency.
Exactly.
All under
so it's
it.
a combination of all of that, and so we have yet to see what that entails. And so Mufariat Kamil is also, her background is in agriculture and and she's had leadership positions in the past. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see how this, what the details are. But the Minister of Defense, especially in a patriarchy like Ethiopia, where women have continued to face, you know, critical challenges like gender-based violence and female genital mutilation, all these societal problems and norms that are still a problem within the country. We have to see, and having the defense, having a woman on the helm of that is a very progressive move, and we have to see how that pans out.
Also represented in the new cabinet are marginalized ethnic groups. The new minister, like you mentioned, predominantly from Muslim Afro region, and the finance minister from the Somali region. What does this signal for the government?
As I mentioned earlier, Ethiopia has 80 ethnic groups, and having a ethnic representation within the highest offices of the country is also setting an example for representation within the country.
VOA Salem Salomon, thanks for your input.
Thanks for having me.
The World Health Organization says the Ebola outbreak in the DRC is not a global health emergency yet, and there's optimism that it can be brought under control. But the group's emergency committee also says it's deeply concerned that the situation will deteriorate without a surge in action. The committee met today to consider a recent jump in cases and deaths. Declaring a health emergency of international concern would have led to trade and travel restrictions. DRC officials say they feel that's not necessary yet, as the outbreak has been contained inside its borders. The death toll stands at 139, including 24 over the past week, from more than 210 confirmed and suspected cases since late July. The outbreak is an area with more than 100 armed groups and 1 million displaced people. Some health workers have been pulled from hotspots. Some staffers have been attacked, and there is resistance in some areas to vaccinations or turning over possible victims for treatment. Officials have had mixed success in convincing families to stop traditional funerals in which people touch the deceased. And there is strong opposition sentiment in the area that fuels mistrust of health workers' motivations. The WHO and other groups say they want to stay but have put together contingency plans in case the situation deteriorates. There are also concerns that the outbreak could cross over to Uganda, Rwanda, and South Sudan. A new report finds that 15 million women, men, and children in the DRC don't have enough food to eat. This is double the 7.7 million figure from last year. The report conducted by the World Food Program, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and the DRC's Ministry of Agriculture reveals that people have become so desperate that many women and girls have gone into prostitution, and men and young boys are joining armed forces to make money for food. Eureka Blom is the country director for the DRC for the Norwegian Refugee Council. She spoke with me about the increasingly deteriorating hunger situation in the DRC, which is primarily driven by violence.
Well, we are referring to a report published by World Food and FAO, where they have looked into the situation. And it is very clear that there has been underfunding of the humanitarian response, and people have not been able to care for themselves. They are in displacement and they cannot farm. And this has had a very severe effect on the possibility of getting food, and malnutrition and hunger is increasing rapidly.
What are people doing to try to compensate or try to get food?
And it is difficult to say. They are as much as possible trying to reach their land so that they can farm. And we work with different programs so that they can get access. But sometimes the security situation doesn't permit this, and they are dependent on humanitarian aid. And if they are not getting any assistance, the situation of malnutrition is increasing, and they will die if they don't get assistance in them.
The report pointed out that some of the women and girls, or many of the women and girls, are resorting to prostitution, and some of the men and the boys are joining rebel armed groups just to try to get money so that they can buy food.
Yes, this is classical coping mechanism when the humanitarian response doesn't really fulfill all the needs. People need to, they do whatever they can to survive. They try to earn money or, as a last resort, they join different groups, criminality and armed groups.
Why has humanitarian assistance fallen off in the past year?
Well, actually, what has happened in Congo is that we have had a massive increase already in 2017, reaching historical high levels of 4.5 million displaced in Congo in the beginning of the year, a trend that has continued during 2018, and the level of funding has not increased in the same way. It's still on the same level as it was in 2016. And this has a result that we only see 28% of the response is funded at this point. And this, of course, will give massive effects on the people that are in crisis.
I understand UNICEF has put out a report as well that's saying 43% of children under 5 are suffering from malnutrition. This is across all of the DRC.
Yes, so people are very poor, but also what we see now is an increase in these numbers. You can say that you have for a long time here had a situation of malnutrition. But what is very severe now is that we're seeing a doubling of the malnutrition rates. And that is very preoccupying, of course. This will give long consequences for generations to come if children are not being able to have enough food during the time that they grow up.
That's Ulrika Blom, Country Director for the DRC for the Norwegian Refugee Council. She spoke with me from Goma.
Sixteen past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The United Nations World Food Program has suspended food aid deliveries to some parts of South Sudan due to insecurity. Simon Kamelbrick, the WFP Deputy Country Director, says the areas cut off include Lir, Dabalual, and Maindit. About 60,000 families are left without aid. In recent months, government and armed opposition forces have repeatedly clashed in the region. Both sides deny responsibility for starting the clashes. Kamel Bik told VOA reporter Waki Simon Wudu in Juba, it is nearly impossible for aid agencies to reach those areas because they are so dangerous. Most of the residents in these areas are internally displaced after they fled their villages to escape fighting between government and rebel forces. Onyotu Adigo, South Sudan's agriculture and food security minister, tells VOA's South Sudan in Focus program that the government and opposition groups are working to communicate with the combatants. They want to persuade all sides to observe the peace agreement signed last month.
And a new investigative documentary has implicated Kenyan banks in money laundering for corrupt South Sudanese leaders. Ryal Ambor has details.
Protesters, some of them South Sudanese, marched in Nairobi to demand that Kenyan authorities freeze assets of corrupt South Sudanese leaders and sanction Kenyan banks for money laundering. Daniel Yeo Deng is a South Sudanese activist who was injured in his country's civil war and is bound to a wheelchair.
These people, they have taken a lot and they are not doing anything. What they are doing is just to kill the common people. So we are tired of killing because they can kill people using the state that is our opposition, or the failure is being objected to other people. So we need this protest or solidarity which has been given by civil society in Kenya to be implemented. Actually, we need this money to be freeze.
The protest was sparked by The Profiteers, a three-part investigative documentary by Kenyan-based production house Africa Uncensored. It alleges top South Sudanese officials laundered stolen funds and war proceeds through Kenya's banks, bought Nairobi property, and are being protected by Kenya's military.
Millions of dollars from South Sudan.
John Alan Namu is the investigation's lead reporter.
We have a very positive past with South Sudan. But what has happened is that there are certain members of the business and political elite who are taking advantage of the conflict or aligning themselves to politicians who are stealing, literally stealing from South Sudan and having that money invested here.
The documentary was screened this week at a Nairobi theater after Kenya's KTN News scrapped a planned broadcast over a content dispute with Africa Uncensored.
Are you traveling back today?
Kenya's military has not commented on the allegations. Kenya's Bankers Association addressed protesters but did not confirm nor deny South Sudanese money laundering. Spokesperson Nuru Mugambi agreed to work towards ending unlawful money flows.
We are aligned with your cause. to reinforce the banking system, and by doing so, eradicate money laundering, financing of terrorism, and other economic crimes.
South Sudan's five-year civil war has killed an estimated 382,000 people and displaced more than 4 million from their homes. A power-sharing deal agreed to in July by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar has raised hopes for an end to the conflict. But activists fear the peace deal, if it holds, would insulate South Sudan's leaders from corruption charges. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Activists in Malawi are protesting construction of a statue of India's independence leader Mahatma Gandhi. The statue in the commercial capital Blantyre is being erected as part of a deal for India to build a $10 million convention center. A group of protesters say the statue is an insult to Malawians and Africa because of racial slurs Gandhi made as a young man. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
An online campaign in Malawi has collected nearly 4,000 signatures against erecting a statue of India's independence leader, Mahatma Gandhi. Mpambira Obregambewa, an organizer of the Gandhi Must Fall campaign, says Malawians should not honor Gandhi because of racial slurs.
This primarily also draws back to the time that he was in South Africa, when he was an activist, where he based his fight for the rights of Indians based on the discrimination of black people. He alluded to the fact that Indians are racially superior to black people.
Gandhi's racial slurs were documented in letters the Indian leader wrote as a young man while living in South Africa in the late 1800s. In the letters, Gandhi referred to Africans savages and kafirs, an insulting term for black Africans when comparing them with Indian population. Gandhi's relatives and supporters note that the comments were common parents at the time and that he made no similar slurs in later life. Malawi's government spokesperson Nicholas Dawusi says he does not believe that Gandhi was a racist.
There is no issue here. This is a storm in a teacup. It's just been perpetrated by bad people. But I think it is just being thrown out of proportion. And I think we do not need to have such kind of behavior. But in government will proceed.
Malawi's Minister of Foreign Affairs says the Gandhi's statue aims to recognize his role in the struggle against colonialism. Gandhi's non-violent fight against British rule in India inspired numerous independence and civil rights movements and leaders across the globe, from Martin Luther King in the United States to Nelson Mandela's struggle against South African apartheid. Rafiki Hajjad is the executive director of the Blantyre think tank, Institute for Policy Interaction. He argues the Malawi government should admit Gandhi had a racist view in his 20s, but abandoned them in his 40s in the struggle for civil rights.
And I think one has to shed a lot of light on the subject before proceeding, because otherwise the philosophy of non-violent resistance that Mahatma Gandhi embodied will be lost.
Construction of Malawi's Gandhi Monument began in August on a street already named after the Indian leader. Along with the statue, the Indian government is building the Mahatma Gandhi Convention Center in Blantyre, a win for Malawi's economy. On the streets, Malawians have divided views on the Gandhi monument. Rachel Misoya sells second-hand clothes.
We have countries like America, we have countries like Britain, and we have our fellow Malawians who have done a great job to this country. Why not respecting them? We are respecting someone who just did something little to the country.
Gray Massa is a resident of Chimwankunda Township.
Whether people think Mahatma Gandhi was a racist or not is just an opinion that each one can have. People can choose to erect statues anywhere, in as far as it is in accordance with the law of that land.
It is not the first time an African monument to Gandhi had been made with protest because of his early views on race. There were a similar uproar in 2003 against a Gandhi statue in Johannesburg. In Ghana, a statue of Gandhi in 2016 was relocated off a university campus after professors petitioned against the monument. They said African heroes should be honored first. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Zimbabwe's government says the economy is stabilizing after new measures intended to improve conditions set commodity prices soaring. Despite assurances that the government has the situation under control, many in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe's second largest city, are worried. Reporter Addie Gondo takes a look.
Observers say the trigger of the crisis is the speculative behavior of money dealers who profit from currency fluctuations. But they say even more important is a new tax increase on electronic money transfers. It has caused a scarcity of fuel and a jump in prices of basic goods. Some shops are closing out of fear of losing the fight against the galloping inflation. Zimbabwe's financial system also contributes to the problem. The country uses currencies such as the South African rand and the US dollar alongside official bond notes. The notes can only purchase domestically produced goods. Exports are low, and therefore so are foreign currency reserves. Zimbabwe is not able to earn enough US dollars to buy the imported goods and services that it needs. As a result, in Bulawayo, there are queues for imported fuels, including diesel, which are in short supply. For one motorist, Mr. John Dembo, the solution to the crisis is political and some might say rather drastic.
My friend, things are tough. Yeah. It's far much better to opposite party. Things are very, very tough. Yeah, we want to opposite party because things are very, very tough. All prices that have gone up. I think 200% or 1,000%. Yeah. And also if you, a litre, you can get $2.50, $2 a litre from $1.35.
The government is blamed for the taxes that are in turn said to be behind the surge in prices. But authorities say the medicine, though painful, is necessary. Still, ordinary Zimbabweans like Mildred Grove, a mother of two, bear the brunt of the shortages.
If only the Minister of Finance could cancel that 2% thing, because people are now panicking and the rates for the foreign currency are just rising every 3 hours. So, hey, I don't know where we're really going with this situation. Shortage of important commodities like cooking oil, sugar, flour, short supply. It's really bad. They're increasing, I think, every day, every hour. Prices are increasing. If only the government could give a hint to the Minister of Finance to cancel that 2%.
Observers say the reality of Zimbabwe's economic situation is wasteful spending. Government spent US $3.8 billion in the first 6 months of the year against revenues of US $2.5 billion, creating a deficit of US $1.3 billion. Thomas Stolle is a political scientist based in Bulawayo, and he weighs in on the subject.
In an economy like ours, where you have around 90% unemployment rate, surely how do you tax unemployed people? Our economy at the moment is highly informalized because people are outside formal employment. So I think the tax regime that has been put in place by government is not going to work. It's going to bite the ordinary person in a very negative way because already Zimbabweans are highly taxed given the fact that they are not employed. So they're trying to make ends. So it's going to spiral. I think it's going to push citizens on the brink. We're most likely going to see food riots and most likely going to see protests again if this situation is not arrested in time.
In essence, the government is spending more than it's making. To balance the budget, officials have to raise money and cut expenditures. The new finance minister recently revealed that 70% of its revenues pay for the civil service, which he plans to cut. Economists say it makes sense to tax electronic banking, which represents US$65 billion and 90% of all financial transactions. The problem, in their view, is the government's record of inconsistency. They say it has failed to follow through on a long list of economic reforms. Some doubt the public will support the government's new policies when many Zimbabweans feel they're already paying too much in taxes and that the government is not carrying its own weight. Reporting for VOA in Bulawayo, this is Addie Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll talk about Africa's land ownership
and the challenge of land reform. We'll examine Africa's land redistribution and the fundamental issue of land inequality on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.